Isn't it time you lived life on your own terms? If not now, when? Visit abrilliantgamble.com for more information on Blair's new exciting online coaching program. Midlife doesn't have to be a crisis. It's a time to rethink who you are and what you really want from your work, your life, and yourself. Sacrificing your soul stops here. It's time to make some plans, make them happen, and live the life you deserve. With interviews, stories from her own adventures, and expert insights, here's your host, best-selling author, speaker, and coach, Blair Palmer.
Hello and welcome to episode 115 of A Brilliant Gamble. I hope you are really well. Today's show is all about money. Money. It's the big challenge for anyone who wants to create a better, more balanced life. Do something for a living outside of the corporate 9-to-5. In fact, your feelings about money could be the biggest barrier to you even thinking about doing anything other than what you do today instead. And that's why I wanted to focus today's show all about that. Money's been an issue for me over the years. I've got lots and lots of hang-ups, which I've spent about 20 years picking my way through, and I never quite get to the bottom of it, but I certainly have shifted a lot of my beliefs about money, which has not only made me a wealthier person, but also a more happy and peaceful person. So I hope that you, if you have already started that journey, that today's show builds on that. And if you haven't started that journey today, then this is the perfect place to start. I think actually our guest today is going to become a bit of a regular on the show because there is so much to talk about when it comes to money, making it, saving it, spending it, and changing our attitudes towards it. So we could only touch on those subjects in a very light way in this interview, but we do cover a huge range of different topics. Andy Hill is my guest. He's a podcaster and author who's passionate about creating an incredible life for his family by being financially intelligent. He and his wife managed to pay off $50,000 of personal debt and their whole mortgage within 5 years. And they've increased their net worth from $50,000 to $750,000 in 8 years. So it's definitely worth trying to get a few secrets out of him, don't you think? One of the things that's really interesting about Andy is that he holds down a full-time job as well. So his podcast and the other work he does is his side hustle, not his full-time job. And as you'll hear in the interview, I really love hearing this because it means that you can keep the security of your full-time job and do what you love for a living. You don't necessarily have to choose one or the other, or you certainly don't need to choose one or the other straight away. In this interview, we talk about how Andy and his wife sorted out their own debt issues, how Andy balances a full-time job with a busy and successful side hustle and his family life, and how to plan your finances as you start planning your escape from the rat race. Do check out his podcast. It's called Marriage, Kids and Money, and some of the tools and apps that he talks about in this show. I'll tell you more about those at the end of the interview. I really suggest that you make time to listen to our whole conversation because we cover so much. And towards the end, we talk about what he's learned about money from the millionaires he's interviewed on his show. And I don't want you to miss that. Anyway, let's go over to the interview. Andy, so good to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm great, Blair. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I've got a lot of things to talk to you about because whatever your plans post-corporate life, money and thoughts of money, planning about money, fears about money, excitement about money, all of these things are just such a huge part of making that transition. So there's tons and tons to talk about. But maybe we can start by talking about you. So you are not you're not an accountant, you're not a financial advisor. So how did you get into this fascination with money and how to really, really get on top of your finances?
Oh, self-preservation, I think, right? You know, as a young parent, I wanted to figure out a way to give my family an incredible life. And as soon as my wife and I saw our ultrasound picture of our little daughter coming into the world, something clicked in my brain where it was, hey, Andy, you're not just thinking about yourself anymore. You're literally bringing a human into this world, and you need to make sure that that little girl has an incredible life. And that's just sort of become my driving force, really since, you know, maybe a year or two after Nicole and I got married. And that is really where things started for us. And, you know, we had, I think we had about $50,000 of debt at the time when we got married. And most of it was from me, with my student loans. And, you know, I would spend on the equity of my home. It was the home equity line of credit, just use it for going to the bar, or going to on vacations, or hanging out with my friends, anything I wanted to do, because credit, you know, you can get credit very easily. So it just kind of racked up things. But yeah, when we found out we were going to be parents, things just sort of changed for us.
I mean, $50,000 in debt. And did that include your mortgage, or was that something separate?
That was something separate. Yeah. So we had, I think about $30,000 of student loans. My wife had a $20,000 car loan. And then there was a portion of it, you know, even before we got married, that was on that home equity line of credit. But no, we had a mortgage on top of that as well. So yes, debt.
And now you're debt free, right? No mortgage and no debt at all. So how did you do that? I mean, as a young family with little kids, that's like the worst time, I would think, to try to find money to pay off debt.
Yeah. We were pretty privileged when we got together. We were, I was making maybe, let's see, she was making around 60,000 bucks, and I was making maybe like 48,000. So a little over six figures in our little household, right? So as we decided, hey, you know, let's try to get rid of this debt and, you know, have our daughter live in a debt-free home when she comes into the world, wouldn't that be cool? We decided, hey, what could we do to just live on half of our income? And then just start from there. And it wasn't easy. It was a transition for us, because we were used to, hey, we've got this money, we're young, let's go out, let's have fun, and let's go to the concert that we want to go to, let's go to the bar. And we just sort of shifted our mindsets a little bit. And yeah, we still had some fun, but you know, living on half of your income, you have to make some changes. And a lot of that for us was just on pure entertainment. You know, we spent a lot of money having fun and vacations and things like that. And we had never looked at a budget or had a budget before. It sort of sounded restricted to us, restrictive. But we looked into it, and it's something that really kept us on track. So every month, starting from that point, about 7 years ago, we started a tradition called the budget party. So we would get together and look at our spending from the previous month, and then plan for our spending for the next month, and then keep those financial dreams in front of us the whole time. So a big dream at that time was to pay off those loans that we had so that Nicole could eventually become a stay-at-home mom. That was sort of our driving force together, saying, hey, if we're able to pay off all this debt, if we're able to live on half, you'll be able to leave that job that you're not really that excited about, sweetheart, and you'll be able to raise our children at home. And that really kind of lit her up. You know, for me, I was kind of into it. I like goals. I like numbers and things like that. For her, it was more of, all right, what are the emotional goals that are associated with this? What is the bigger impact? Yeah, paying off debt, that sounds great. But what does that mean? Well, that would mean that you'd be able to leave this job you're sort of so-so about and be able to be a stay-at-home mom. And there's lots of fun that comes with being a stay-at-home mom, but there's also a lot of joy that comes with being able to raise your kids at home. So that became our driving force. And we paid off that consumer debt, that $50,000 of debt in about 12 months by living on half. And once we were able to pay that off, we just kept up the same intensity in our family. Yes, we were able to grow our income a little bit. Nicole went from full-time to part-time and eventually no time. So it was sort of a step ladder for her, which actually made things a little easier for us financially. But we kept living on half, and we were able to pay our mortgage off from our new home that we purchased in less than 4 years. So about a year and a half ago now, we've been mortgage-free and debt-free. So we're loving life right now at the Hill House.
Yeah. I mean, apart from some of the things we're going to talk about, you know, the importance of looking at your finances when you're thinking of leaving your job
I mean, that's going to be a big part of our conversation. But just apart from that, this idea of being able to live on half of your income, which may not be possible for everybody, but, you know, for a lot of people, actually, you get used to a certain standard of living, and actually you could live on a lot less. I personally love having a budget. It's not something that I had done for a long time because I'd been a bit flamboyant for a few years, but we went traveling last year. My audience will know this. And so we had a very limited budget while we were traveling. We just had to live within it. And we've come home and we've pretty much kept the same budget because it's actually really fun to say no to something because you're just not going to go over budget this month. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
You might be saying no to something, but you're saying yes to something else. You're saying yes to building your business. You're saying yes to being able to, you know, save up for an emergency so you're not going crazy when something bad happens. So, it's not always a no with the budget, but it sometimes can feel like that, right?
Yeah. And of course, the other thing you said, which was this gave your wife a choice to leave a job that she didn't like to do something else instead that she would like, in this case, raise the family. And yes. I think that's kind of perfect segue for us to talk about some of these pieces around money. What before we do though, one of the things that's very interesting about you is most of the people that I interview on this show run their own business. Now you have your side hustle, which is your podcast and the other work you do around finances, but you also have a day job as well. And that's right. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that decision to start up something on the side, really without the intention of leaving your job at all. Because I think a lot of people would think, well, it's a choice. I either do my 9-to-5 or I start this other thing. I can't do them both.
Yeah. A few reasons to do that. For me, it was, I wanted to do something that creatively inspired me. And with my job, I'm in sales, I'm in corporate sales. So I have a product or a service that I sell every day. And I've done that for the past 15 years, been in the same industry for a while. I've gotten pretty good at it. My clients like me, my employer likes me, but I was kind of looking for something a little bit different, different change for me. And so I wanted to sort of flex my creative muscles, flex my entrepreneurial muscle and see if I could figure this out. It's like a puzzle for me. You know, I don't know anything about being an entrepreneur or haven't known anything over the past couple of years. And, you know, I've grown my knowledge since then, but it was a real challenge for me. And I love challenges. You know, I always put up big goals for myself at the beginning of the year, no matter what I'm doing. And this was a big goal for me a few years ago. So that's one of the reasons. Another reason is that, you know, we have had some financial success in our lives, and part of my journey my feeling when I do these things is that I want to give back. You know, there's a lot of people that don't have that situation right now, and is there something that I could do to share my experience to help people get there? So I wanted to contribute. And then lastly, I still want to learn. So part of my show and part of my blog and my podcast is interviewing some really smart people that can help me and my family grow and keep this legacy going, because I want my kids to have an incredible life. And I want them to continue this legacy of building wealth and giving back. And it's exciting to me. So really those three reasons, you know, flexing my entrepreneurial muscle, that creative muscle, wanting to contribute, and then also wanting to learn. So those are the three reasons I started it.
It's so interesting because I do think that a lot of people, you know, they think that something's missing in their life, and so they have to transform everything. We were talking about this before we hit record about a program that I'm developing, a course that I'm developing, which is to help people to navigate the transition. So how do you go from full-time job to working for yourself full-time or running some kind of venture and turning your back entirely on corporate life? And it might take you a few months or even a few years to make that transition. So how do you do that? But one of the things I want to say in that program is you might decide not to. You might decide, actually, keep the 9-to-5, but there are some other things that I can put into my life that just fill the gap that I thought I needed to leave in order to fill. And some of the things you were talking about, being stretched a bit, learning new things, stretching those entrepreneurial muscles, running a business, but without it having to be everything. You still have this nice, secure job that you like. Mm-hmm. You mentioned something to me earlier about that you actually think it's made you a better employee.
Absolutely, yeah. So with the ability for me to try to figure out this digital entrepreneurial thing from scratch, it's actually helped me to enhance my skills. So I'd have to be a better communicator to start, you know, getting out there and being an entrepreneur, really stretching your bounds, making a community, and, you know, continuing the conversation. So that's helped me to do the same thing at work. So some of the social media skills that I've developed through being a digital entrepreneur, I've transitioned that into my sales role, and it's helped me to earn new business. Over the past, 2 or 3 years, I've exceeded my sales goals at work as I've started this other business. So I think it's really complemented the work that I need to do in my 9-to-5 and in the same function with my entrepreneur, with my small business. So it's really helped me out a lot. And some of the skills that I've developed have really, you know, excited me when I talk about how I can do this for a full-time job eventually. So it's exciting. It's exciting conversations to have right now.
It is. And I think it might get some people really thinking about what their options are greater than maybe they thought. You know, if money, it isn't so much in your case, but if money is a real factor keeping you stuck in mm-hmm. your job, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to reject any plans to start your own business.
Absolutely. And right now, the time commitment for something like this is around 10 to 20 hours a week. So I've crafted it around my family, and I've crafted it around my job so that it's doable. And are there weeks that things go off of schedule? Of course, but I've tried to craft my week in a way where things are in harmony, you know? So for example, I'll come home from my full-time job on a regular weekday. And one of the things that I try to do as a parent is that I completely shut off my device when I come home, and I put it completely away from me in the other room so that I can focus on my kids, because that 2 to 3 hours that we have for dinner, for wrestling, for singing karaoke before we put the kids to bed is magical stuff. And I'm never going to be able to get that back. So that's the way that at least I separate my full-time job with my family life. And then a way that I separate my entrepreneur, my small business with work is that I just get up very early to craft out a couple hours of work, that because it really inspires me. And it's the fact that I do it as the first thing that I get done in the day makes me more inspired to go in the office and give it my all, because I've been able to give myself almost that self-care, you know, that, hey, let's fill up Andy's bucket with something he's really inspired to do, and then go to work and, you know, get the job done, you know, get the paycheck, and make sure that you're taking care of your family. So I've filled it in a way that works for our lives right now.
Yeah. It sounds great. So let's talk about the money side of starting up your own thing. So if we start with, let's say someone is, they're thinking, yes, I do want to leave my job. I do want to start my own venture, maybe 12 months down the line. But of course, one of the big fears I'm going to have is around money. Firstly, how will I make money when I leave? But also, how do I make sure that I have security? Because obviously, in a full-time job, it's not maybe as secure as it used to be, but I mean, it's more secure than running your own business, for sure. So if you've been used to that, the prospect of not having that secure income does really focus your mind in on, let's just make sure that our finances are set up well. What are some of the first areas that people should be looking at when they're starting to think about that transition to make sure that they have a bit more security when they finally leave than they needed when they had their full-time job?
Yeah, I think jumping right away is probably a bad idea, because you want to make sure not only are you financially set, but also you want to make sure what you're jumping to is something that's going to fill you up and make you really excited, right? So maybe there's a way to test the waters in the beginning per se, right? So if there's a topic or an industry or something that you're really excited about, I would recommend just trying to get a part of that conversation. You know, whether it's starting a blog or starting a podcast or, you know, even just connecting with people in that community, asking questions, starting to learn more about it. You want to make sure that you are really passionate about the subject or the mission that you're on so that you can move forward. So it's almost like a like an internship. Think of it like that. You're testing the waters, right? You're not fully committing, but you're sort of scoping it out. You're shadowing. And if you do that, that is a great first step before you're financially committing to anything. Because if you let go of that six-figure job or whatever kind of job you have and then just say, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to be a professional speaker. Here I go. It's going to be a rough couple of years there where you're making maybe $0 as you ramp up. So what can you do to sort of have that transition? Maybe you are testing the waters and then you're maybe doing it a little bit on the side so you can see, hey, people are actually paying me to do this, or people are actually paying me to be a professional speaker. And then maybe if you do it in the beginning, you're doing it for free, get your name out there. But there's a lot of that ramp up period that you could be doing while you're still working your 9-to-5 that shouldn't interfere or shouldn't interfere with your current job. And that way you can sort of test the waters. That way you know if you're interested without plopping down a bunch of money or saying goodbye to your recurring income, especially if you have a family. And it could be a great way to start.
Yeah, I think that's really right. And I like this idea of thinking about it as an internship, because you wouldn't expect to be paid for an internship. So this is the equivalent of that. This is you dipping your toe in the water, getting some experience, making the connections, seeing how the skills you have could transfer to this new thing, which could be very different, or it could be, you know, similar, but, you know, doing it for yourself. So I really, really like that. And I think that a lot of people feel like they do have to spend a lot of money, particularly on things like courses. You know, a lot of people who think, well, in order to have credibility in this field, I need to take course after course after course. And that's an investment that maybe because they're not in an entrepreneurial mindset, they're not coming to terms with the fact that that's an investment that they need to get back before they can really consider themselves to actually be making any money.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've bought quite a few courses myself. What I've found, and you know, it all depends on the people, is that I've learned a lot more by trial and error that I have through a course. And it doesn't surprise me really. I'm thinking of college. You know, I went to college and yeah, sure, I learned some, but man, I learned a lot more when I got my first internship. You learn while doing as opposed to while studying. And yeah, there's a great combination of the two. I'm not saying don't educate yourself or don't take courses, but you really have to test the waters and see what works for you and see what your style is and your working style. So maybe it's a combination, but I really feel like getting out there and trying it, almost, you know, the Nike method, just do it, right? Go out there and give it a try and see what you do. See what your style is and see how you like it.
What about then the financial preparedness? Something that was very important for me, now I left my proper job 20 years ago and I was single, childless. I did own a house, but that was really the only kind of responsibility that I had. But still, I made sure that I had 6 months of money in the bank before I walked out the door of my secure job. And for me, by the time that 6 months of money ran out, I had replaced it with income. And I had been running my business as a side hustle before, so I already had a little bit of it, and then I was building up from there. But it never occurred to me to do anything more sophisticated. So it never occurred to me to leverage any of my other assets, my home or anything like that. What are some of the things that people can do? I mean, even questions they should be asking themselves to make sure that by the time they make that leap, they're on top of their finances and their finances are in a good place.
Yeah, I love what you did. That makes a lot of sense. Creating a runway for yourself, you know, for learning, for growing your business. And it also puts that time pressure on you too, which a little pressure is good, right? If you say, hey, I've got 6 months worth of savings, I need to get ramped up by that 6 month mark, or I'm going to have to figure this out. I guess worst case scenario is you got to get a job again. I mean, that's pretty privileged, right? So, you know, having that runway and then asking yourself, really, how long do I think it's going to take me to replace the income that I was making? Is it 6 months like your situation? Is it 12 months? And then take advantage of that. Throw that into an accessible account so that you can still use that for your life. But something else that I would suggest, if you do have a little bit more financial means to prepare, is look at some other ways of developing some passive income that can support you while you're making that transition. So a couple examples, if you have a, you know, an after-tax brokerage account where you're able to receive some dividends on a monthly basis or annual basis that can give you some money, even if you don't make money from your job or from your side hustle, or if you have a rental property or an Airbnb or something like that, where you're saying, okay, well, at least I have this money if all else fails, right? So it's sort of diversifying the income streams, right? So you've got your full-time job, you've got your side hustle right now, but eventually going to be your full-time, you know, small business, and then maybe some passive income streams. So if you have all those legs to the stool, if one of them falls away, you're still going to be okay. So thinking about it in that aspect might help a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, I was fortunate enough that I didn't have to discuss my decision with anybody. I did discuss it with my parents because actually the really worst case scenario was I would move home. Which you can do when you're 29 or 30. I mean, you can do it anytime, probably, as long as you have parents around. But, you know, when you're 29 or 30, it's not the worst thing possible to live with your parents. So that was a conversation I had to have. That was my absolute backstop. But I didn't have to discuss it with a partner or anything. Discussing money is not something that as a culture we're very good at. And even within relationships, it can be a really difficult conversation to have, particularly if one of you is going to be staying in a job to support the other one coming out of work. I know that you and your wife, I mean, as you've already said, have had a lot of conversations about money. How has that always been easy for you?
Oh, no, it's still not easy today. My wife and I are very different when it comes to money too. Traditionally, I'm more of the, you know, the saver, and she's more of the spender. But you know what? We come together where there's actually moments in our lives where we flip-flop. You know, I love spending on, you know, our kids' activities. I'm always the first one to sign them up for soccer practice and dance class and things like that. And Nicole's more along the lines of, you know, wanting to spend on, you know, making our home as nice as it can be, you know, furniture and things like that. So those are some of the things that we vary on with regard to how we spend. But to answer your question on how people can, you know, broach that conversation, I think it is so important because, you know, when we got married, we talked about our dreams and we talked about our, you know, our future, things that got us excited about each other. So just because we've been stuck in a job that we don't like or that doesn't inspire us anymore, it doesn't mean we need to continue to do that. And I think your partner, whoever your partner is, your spouse or, you know, your significant other, would need to be a part of that as well. So this is a serious conversation. It's not something you talk about in passing while you're making dinner or while the kids are hanging on your leg. Make it a serious moment because it is serious. So sit down on the comfy couch, you know, turn off the phones, turn off the TV, and have a serious conversation about it. This is something that I really want to do with my life. I am not inspired by my current 9-to-5, and I want to take my photography hobby and turn it into this incredible photography business that is just going to fill me up and make me so excited. Do I know that it's going to be the perfect thing for me? No, but what I need from you is your support and your love and your, you know, your guidance to help me get there. And we're going to have to make some changes to make that happen. A great way to make this conversation easier is if you do the research beforehand. If you're going to be asking for a big request from anybody, take some of the work off of their side and say, I've figured out how much savings we need to do to give myself that runway. It's going to require us to cut back by whatever, $500 a month in order to get there. Would you be willing to sacrifice $500 a month in these areas to help me achieve this dream? I mean, if you come prepared and you set out specific time where you're really asking for their love and participation, I would hope that those conversations would go well. But you need that environment set up right. You need no distractions. you need dedicated time and you need to prepare for that conversation because it is super serious. This is super serious stuff that we're talking about. If it goes the wrong way, it could be, you know, it could be disastrous for your relationship. So you coming prepared and showing how serious you are about it could go miles.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I know from running a business for such a long time is that if you don't know your numbers, you're going to lose your business. So, and I nearly have. I mean, that's how I learned that lesson. So,
yeah, trial and error, right?
You know, I remember sitting in, on the paving in the car park outside of the office on the phone to my dad, saying to him, if this goes the way that it looks like it might go, will you bail me out? And thinking, you know, I don't know how this has happened. And that is because I didn't know my numbers. Did not. So ever since then, I've been right on top of the numbers. But I think this conversation you're talking about is maybe one of the first times when you start to really realize, oh, we need to know every single number. We need to know where our money goes, how much money we need, you know, in a way that you maybe don't need to take so seriously when someone else is paying your salary.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's great tools to make this easy too. So, you know, one tool that Nicole and I use for our personal finances is Mint. It's free. We put all of our information in there. They, you know, it shows our income, it shows our expenses, it shows areas that we can, you know, improve on. And it's something that we love. You know, another great one is Tiller. It's an Excel and Google Sheets based tool. So it's based on spreadsheets. So if you like spreadsheets and you want automation, that's another great one too. So, and then I know, you know, programs like QuickBooks for your small business or FreshBooks, things like this that help you understand what the numbers are, because this is all a numbers game. I mean, you got the income, you got the expenses. Are you making a profit? Are you not? You know, what is the plan? Being able to see that in an easy way through an app on your phone just takes some of the headache away from it. And yeah, come prepared, right?
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that, I mean, we've talked about how hard it can be to talk about money, even with your most loved other half. Do you think that we just carry with us a lot of fear around money? I mean, certainly when I ask my community what the barriers are for them, It's time and money always. But I wonder if, yes, there are some really important practical concerns around money and you've got to have the conversations and all of that. But I wonder if some of that fear is based on hardwired beliefs and assumptions and kind of mindset. And actually, we need to overcome some of that fear around money.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that's in our history. For some reason, people don't like talking about money. And some of it comes with the fact that people don't want to talk about something that they're not super educated on. So they'll pull back a little bit and they won't share, or it's sort of a, you know, a scarcity mindset. Like if I share, then what does that mean? That are they going to share with me? Are they not going to share with me? Am I vulnerable in some way by sharing that? Because we tie a lot of our self-worth to our net worth, you know, and it's just not true, you know. I mean, but when you're able to open up or at least be a part of a community that allows you to have some of that types of conversation, you'll find that you'll not only become more confident, but you become more educated too, and grow your community and grow your knowledge. So it sounds like you're fostering a lot of those conversations right now in your community and having that open environment, whether it's on a Facebook group or just, you know, a couple folks that you meet for coffee, can be incredible. And if you're able to have that type of dialogue with your spouse, that's even better. And sometimes it just takes those baby steps in the beginning to start opening up those doors for conversation.
So let's say you've had the conversation with your spouse. You've been thinking about ways that you can create, as you called it, this runway. I really like the idea of that. This kind of this amount of safety net for those first few months or even year, depending on your tolerance to risk, how much you need. So you've put all that in place, and now you're starting to think about investing in your new venture. What are some of the things, because again, your business can start out very expensive or you can do things on a shoestring.
Yeah.
What are some of the tricks or different ways maybe of thinking about where to put the money so that you don't end up almost already in debt with yourself before you've even got your first customer?
Yeah, I'm a tough one to talk to on this one because I am very debt averse. So the entrepreneurial ventures or the small businesses that excite me are the ones that don't require a lot of capital in the beginning. You know, let's say you wanted to go to that photographer track. Do you really need to spend a ton of money outside of the camera itself and maybe a website to show off your work? Do you really need to spend a ton of money in the beginning on advertising or an office or things like that? I don't think you do. I think that you just build up from there. And I don't mind the shoestring because that helps you to stay safe through this whole process. People could plunk down $100,000 on their new business and they can go bankrupt. You know, it could be really disastrous. So if you have the runway, that helps. But also the other thing is just to keep the expenses as low as possible in the beginning. And it's really a test trial for you and also a test trial for your market. Is this a viable business that you're trying to start? Are people buying it? And if they are, that's great. Continue to invest as you earn that money. That's what I've been doing. I haven't spent very much money on my business, but as soon as I get it over the past couple of years, I've been finding out ways to safely invest back in the business, whether it's outsourcing or whether it's advertising. But these are small ways for me to continue to increase and grow the business. So I'm the debt averse guy, but if you did need to plunk down some capital, like let's say you wanted to write a book or pay some developers to develop an app or something like that, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs I've heard have talked about connecting with your community and then asking them almost to pre-purchase the book or the course or the app or something like that. That way you're testing, hey, is this market actually interested? And also you're getting some capital to continue to invest. So that's a way to really test it out. And if you don't get much interest, that's great. I mean, it's not great, but you at least know that maybe you shouldn't plunk down $50,000 or $100,000 to build that app or whatever it is. So some thoughts.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're really talking my language. When I first started, I had no money to invest. The only money that I was making was going to go and pay my mortgage and buy my groceries. So there wasn't anything to put back in. And I found that I became very creative thinking about how can I get as much exposure. I mean, this was before social media. So this was the early 2000s. There was no Facebook, you know, no LinkedIn. So how can I get as much exposure as possible on zero marketing budget? And actually, you come up with some really clever ideas when you do it that way. Much cleverer than, I'm going to spend £10,000. Who shall I spend my £10,000 with?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, what can I do for free? Like, start at that basis. There are so many things that you can do. Networking, you know, starting a blog that costs you nothing, but you're also putting your communication out there and telling people what your mission is. Being able to connect in communities, really test things out, start conversations with people, ask them questions, ask some people that are close to you or people that are in your target market, just to say, hey, can I get 5 minutes of your time? Can I buy you a cup of coffee and ask you 5 questions about this potential business I'm starting? That costs you what, $3? Like, start slow, but you're going to learn a lot by starting slow. It almost keeps you at pace, but it also keeps you out of debt.
Yeah, yeah. So some people want to start their own thing simply because they want a better lifestyle. It's not about making a lot of money. As long as their new venture supports the lifestyle and they get to do something they love, they are in bliss. But some people really want to make a lot of money out of their business and still love it, of course. But one of the things they want to love is the money. And I know that in your podcast, you've spoken to a lot of people who've made a lot of money. What are some of the key things from those conversations you've had? What are some of the key qualities that those people have, or the key tricks that they've used to turn their little startup into something that makes them into a millionaire?
I think the first thing that I'm circling on my piece of paper right now is patience, because it does not happen overnight. The majority of the people that I talk to on the show, these millionaire entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs that are able to work from their house for 20 hours a week and make six figures, it didn't happen overnight. I mean, the first quality that all of these people have is patience. And then the second one is perseverance, because in the beginning, it's going to take a lot of time. You're going to hear crickets. Nobody's going to want to buy what you're selling. Nobody's going to want to read what you're writing. But over time, if you continue to hone your craft and hone your niche, people will start to see that you are the expert in this area, or you are someone you need to turn to for this product or service. So yeah, I guess the third thing would be really to niche down specifically to exactly what you want to do in your business. If you say, I can do everything for everybody, then nobody's going to listen to you. So find the niche that inspires you and then niche down even further, because finding the exact person that's looking for your service, it's going to be a lot easier that way. Because again, if you try to talk to the masses, you really will be talking to nobody. So I guess to answer your question, patience, perseverance, and then niching down.
Yeah. You know, we say niche in England, and I can sound
now. Maybe that's my Michigan accent. I don't know.
Really English. but so when you niche within your niche, that can be really frightening, I think. You know, I've experienced it myself. When you say, I'm going to basically turn away all this other work that I could do, I'm just going to focus down on these customers that sit within this niche or niche, and then this range of problems that I help them to solve. And that can be really uncomfortable. And it feels counterintuitive. So particularly from a financial perspective, you're going to be sometimes turning away business that you could do because it doesn't fall into this niche.
Absolutely. The niche, and also the area that inspires you the most. So if you love speaking, but somebody wants you to write some articles for them about the topic and you really hate writing, then be okay with saying that's just not my area of expertise or somewhere that I'm not passionate about. Because if your entrepreneurial venture starts to turn into a job again, and you feel like, oh man, I feel like I'm at a job again, then you might as well have that 9-to-5, right? Do the thing that makes you passionate and do the thing that you love, because that's where you're going to find the most joy.
Andy, it's been so good to talk to you. I'm sure that you have reassured some people listening about the finances, and you've definitely given us some really practical ways to just get some sense of control over the money so that you're in charge of the money and the money is not in charge of you.
Well, I appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
I hope you found that useful. I really, really enjoyed talking to Andy, and I just know that there are so many great tips there. You might even want to go and listen to that interview again. He mentioned a few apps that he uses and websites he uses. He mentioned Mint, which is simply mint.com if you want to find out more about what they do. Tiller, which is tillerhq.com. And then he also mentioned QuickBooks and FreshBooks. So you can just Google them. Actually, it's quickbooks.intuit.com or freshbooks.com. All the information about those will be in the show notes as well. So if you didn't manage to write them down, just click on the show notes for more information. Of course, also do check out Andy's website. It's marriagekidsandmoney.com, and listen to his podcast of the same name. It's on iTunes and Spotify. And on his website, he's got lots of book recommendations as well if you really want to challenge your beliefs and behaviours about money. And of course, his own articles and blogs. All of that sits on marriagekidsandmoney.com. If you want support as you start thinking about some of these issues and start planning your escape from the rat race, or if you're already en route, you've handed in your resignation, or you've even left already, then the place to hang out is with me and my buddies and people doing exactly the same thing at our Corporate Escapees Facebook page. It's a new page, it's still very quiet, but we're looking for lively new people to come and join the community and ask lots of questions, and I'm hanging out there a lot. So if you want to get a free bit of Blair, then head over to Corporate Escapees on Facebook. I've spent the last couple of weeks working on some new programs, including an Escape the Rat Race Checklist. This is a free download called Escape the Rat Race Checklist. It's got on it more than 70 items that you need to think about as you start to plan your escape from corporate life. I'm working on it now. It's going to be available in the next couple of weeks, and I'll tell you more about it as we know exactly when it's going to come out. But I highly, highly recommend it. If I had had something like this when I was leaving my job at the BBC, I would have had a lot fewer sleepless nights. Do stay in touch. Join Corporate Escapees on Facebook, but there are lots and lots of other ways to stay in touch with me and the team here at A Brilliant Gamble. And with information about that, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
Website at www.abrilliantgamble.com. There you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog. And on our coaching and classes page, you can find out more about the Brilliant Gamble personal development programs to help you navigate your way through the minefield of life, career and change. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Brilliant Gamble and on our Brilliant Gamble Facebook page. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a Brilliant Gamble